from the King Arthur .com festival grounds.
Captain Samuel Davis, as it's told in the story Tales of the Sea by Archibald McMeekin. Maybe it's McMeekin. The story is called A Vision of the Night. In the year 1872, there was a bark of 742 tons built at Quebec in Narcisse Rose's yard and christened the Countess of Dufferin out of compliment to the beautiful and gracious lady who came that year to Canada as the consort of our most popular Governor General. For nigh on 20 years, this ship endured the sea, a long life for a wooden vessel, and this is the saga of her last voyage. In the latter end of 1891, the Dufferin was loading lumber at St. John, New Brunswick, as many a vessel has done before and since. Her hold was packed with square timber, like a sausage with meat, and her deck was piled with fragrant spruce and pine deals, lashed, chained, and wedged together until they seemed part of the ship itself. Ship and cargo together must meet the ordeal of North Atlantic's winter weather. On December 15th, she put out from St. John for Londonderry. For 10 days she met with variable winds and weather, but on Christmas Day, a southwesterly gale was helping her strongly on a road to Ireland. Captain Doble, however, noticed that the barometer stood at the ominous figure 28 and still was falling. Expecting something heavy, he had his main topsail goose-winged, which means that half this sail on the weather side was tied up tight, so that just a rag of canvas showing, the ship was hove to, facing her dangers. Captain Doble also put out a sea anchor or drag to aid in keeping his vessel head to wind. The warning of the falling glass was soon fulfilled. Hardly was the Dufferin put in this posture of defense when out of the north another gale smote the bark with hurricane force, accompanied by heavy cross seas. The deep boiled like a witch's cauldron. Crossing seas are commingling, fighting billows, a confusion of contending, furious water shoddens, trampling down the strongest ship and crushing it like a child's toy. As soon as the tempest struck the Dufferin, it was plain to see that the huge deck load would put her down. It had to be jettisoned. All the hard labor of the St. John's stevedores had to be quickly undone by desperate men fighting for their lives, but they succeeded, with great difficulty, in getting the last stick overboard, which brought the laboring vessel some relief. All Christmas Day, the Dufferin tried to hold her own, but manifold, sudden, terrific strains in all directions and the direct assaults of the sea began to dismember the luckless vessel, and the winter night closed down. Before the bleak dawn of the next day, the combers that swept over her had smashed through the forward part of the cabin and carried overboard all provisions. The crew managed to get 2 barrels of apples out of the stateroom, but before they could be secured, they were washed away. Most of the drinking water was in casks in the lower hold. The salt water got in and had spoiled it. For 6 days following, the crew of the Dufferin had not a crumb to eat or a drop to drink. The ceaseless buffeting and racking of the ocean sorely tried the old bark. The oakum started from every seam, and the water came pouring in. The pumps were manned, and the crews did their utmost to keep her free, but their labor was useless. Besides, the bitter wind covered the decks with ice. Pumping became too dangerous, and Doble, with a good captain's sense of responsibility for the lives of the crew, called his men off. The crew's pumps ceased to clank. The water poured into the hull, and the Dufferin settled down and down, till her deck, over which the waves washed ceaselessly, was flushed with the sea. Now it stands to reason that a vessel loaded to the hutches with wood is very like a solid log. Like a log, she may roll and pitch and wallow in the sea, but she can no more sink than a log. So it was with the helpless Dufferin. There was nothing more for the crew to do but hold on and not despair. While the drag still held her head to the sea and the pitiful red ensign streamed from the rigging, Union down. Starving, freezing, they crouched together under the slight shelter of the forecastle. The short winter day ended. The long winter night came on, and then the gray dawn. Then the final calamity showed its face. The close-packed lumber in the hull took up the water and began to swell. Something must give way, and that something was the old frame of the doomed bark Countess of Dufferin. The men could see the deck bulging. It was only a question of hours when the ship would go to pieces under their feet in the chaos of billows. So passed Monday, the 27th, Tuesday, the 28th, and Wednesday, the 29th of December, without a sign of rescue or the least alleviation of their sufferings. When would the end come? Now the story turns eastward to Cardiff in Wales, where the Yarmouth bark Arlington of 849 tons is moored alongside the wharf. Her captain was Samuel Bancroft Davis, also of Yarmouth, Nova Scotia, a lucky shipmaster who in all his 40 years at sea never once had to wait for a fair wind. He was a driver once, beating the steamer from Quebec to Havre in the barkentine Peerless with a load of deals. While at Cardiff, the Board of Trade decided that the owners of the Arlington did not make sufficient provision for the safety of the crew and decreed that new lifeboat of the latest build and pattern should be added to her equipment. Later, that boat proved its right to the name. The Arlington herself was not a lucky ship. First and last, she was the death of 32 men. But before the end, she had something to show on the credit side of the ledger. In this same December, the Arlington had brought a cargo of deals across the Western Ocean and was homeward bound in ballast to New York, all well on board. During the night of the 28th, Captain Davis had a remarkable dream. He heard someone calling from a ship in distress. So vivid was the vision that he sprang from his berth and ran on deck to see if all was well. Beyond the wild winter weather, all was well. There was no sign of a ship, no sound beyond the wind and waves. In the storm, the staunch Arlington was making a good run under reduced sail, so Captain Davis went below again. But his vivid dream, if it were a dream, would not leave him. Two terms seemed to stand before his eyes and to ring in his ears. Latitude, 54 north. Longitude, 21 west. He got out his chart and he fixed his position. It was a day's sail away to the northward, far out of the track of steamers and sailing ships. To hunt for a derelict there or thereabouts would mean a wild deviation from his course and most serious loss of time. It might be the wildest wild goose chase. Nonetheless, that cry for help was so real that this hard-bitten driver of a Yarmouth captain altered his course 2 points to make the Arlington cross the spot in the ocean where his dream told him that the derelict was lying. At breakfast, he told his dream to the mate, James L. Hemion, also a Yarmouth man. I saw us taking the crew off a square-rigged vessel like our own, and I saw you going in the boat to get them. Hemion did not, of course, remonstrate or criticize. Yarmouth captain maintains discipline with his accent on the middle syllable. But privately, he thought his captain had suddenly lost his wits. He remembered the tragedy of the Esther Roy, putting the ship on a new course to hunt for a wreck in midwinter all across the Western Ocean on the strength of a dream was sheer madness. If he still wanted proof, there was the circumstance of his going in the boat to the rescue. Rigid etiquette, an ancient sea custom, prescribed the duty to the second mate, like oversight of sails and rigging. The first mate's place is on board. Mr. Hemion remembered other cases of masters going mad, Charlie Armstrong shooting the men off the yards, and so on. Nonetheless, he carried out the orders, and all that day the Arlington ran on farther and farther north over an empty, angry sea. Every mile she took her farther from her port of destination. So passed the 29th of December. Ship routine continued unbroken from watch to watch. Nothing happened. Everyone on board knew of the old man's vagary, and everyone shared the first mate's opinion. At midnight, Captain Davis took on the middle watch and paced as usual the weather side. Suddenly, about 3 o'clock in the pitchy blackness, the lookout spied a darker mass upon the sea and sung out just in time. What ship is that? You've no lights up. I cannot make you out. Improperly indignant, he called again. What ship is that? And then through the calling trumpet, he called again. What ship is that? You, your lights up. The Arlington had just given the answer. Bark, Countess of Dufferin, waterlogged, sinking. We have nothing to put up lights with. Please stand by till morning and take us off. Davis shouted back, I'll stand by. 5 long hours passed as the Arlington made short tacks, keeping her eye on the derelict. By 8 o'clock, it was barely light enough for the sailors to see what they were doing. The Arlington came as near the Dufferin as she dared and spilled oil over the side to make some sort of smooth. Davis called for volunteers, for a captain cannot order men to almost certain death, and 3 able seamen, all Irish, stepped forward. Daniel Keefe, Frank Sullivan, and Thomas O'Leary. Unknown to them, the crew of the derelict were mostly Irish. As they were launching the new lifeboat, Anderson, the second mate, was on the rail, busy with the falls, when a sudden roll of the ship jammed him between the boat and the Davits. He broke 3 ribs and a bone in the right forearm. So the first mate, Hemion, had to go in the boat after all. It was no easy work launching her in that wild sea. 2 trips were necessary to take off those 11 men from the Dufferin. The rescue occupied 1.5 hours. Every moment had its own danger and difficulty, but the stout hearts won through. Before she would be got on board the Arlington again, the new Board of Trade lifeboat was smashed against her side, but it had served its predestined purpose. Everything possible was done for the starving, frostbitten castaways. Food, medicine, clothing were given with sailor generosity. Captain Davis had 40 pairs of woolen socks in his chest, and he used them all. Captain Doble's feet were so badly frostbitten that he was in the hospital in Baltimore for weeks. As soon as he reported his vessel abandoned at sea, latitude 52 degrees, 30 minutes north, longitude 21 degrees, 20 minutes west, to be exact, he wore a grateful note to his preserver. On the representations of the British consul at Baltimore, where Doble told his story, the British government gave Captain Davis a fine gold hunting case watch for his humanity, while the Board of Trade presented Hemion with a silver medal, and the 3 intrepid Irishmen with a bronze medal and £3 sterling apiece for gallantry in saving life at sea. Captain Davis was accorded 1 more peep into the future when the Peerless was being treated rudely at Glace Bay in the manner of loading coal. He dreamed that the steamer which unjustly was to have his berth lost her propeller and could not get in, and also that the mine would take fire. He told the agents of both events before they happened, so that they only were too glad to load that D. Barkentine and get her away. As to the rescue of the Countess of Dufferin, Captain Davis offered no explanation and formed no theory. He rather felt, said his proud son, that the Almighty had used him to carry out his wishes.